Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure. Thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who have been affected by those devastating diagnoses. You can hear those stories and more, including the Williams F1 team's planning director, Richard Jones, right now on your chosen podcast player. The charity work all year round to help develop research and raise awareness. And if you're looking to challenge yourself this new year, why not sign up to the Brain Tumor Charity's Brain Power Challenge? Simply choose a challenge that will boost your brain health, from meditation to 10K runs to mega Sudoku, and set your challenge to either silver, gold or platinum difficulty level. Every penny you raise will be spent on the charity's medical research. £250 covers the cost of 1 day of world-class medical research into kinder and better treatments for brain tumours, which really does make a difference. Follow the Brain Tumor Charity on social media to learn more and to sign up. Boost your brain today to boost other brains tomorrow, because a cure can't wait. This podcast is brought to you by Rodin Cars. Based in New Zealand, but with a new HQ open in Donington Park in the UK, with the Rodin FZ, you have the keys to experience a whole new level of driving performance. A supercar like no other, giving you the chance to feel pure driving pleasure. Designed for easy maintenance, you could own the F1 lifestyle and strive for that perfect lap time with the Rodin FZ. There's plenty of purchasing options, including after-sale partnership, where your FZ is looked after on and off track by an official Formula Racing team, storage and exclusive track access to Rodin's very own circuit in New Zealand. With Rodin and the Rodin FZ, you don't just drive a car, you experience the performance of an open-wheel high-performance supercar. For more information on Rodin and how you can get involved, visit rodin-cars.com.
Hello, Tim Sylvie here, and today we're joined by not one but two racing drivers, one based in Dorset in the UK and the other hails from Auckland, New Zealand. And in honour of our Kiwi guest, I wanted to test your New Zealand knowledge, Harry Benjamin. So, I have three questions for you, and they are seriously easy. So, if you get any of these wrong, well, quite frankly, you don't deserve to be on the podcast. Number one, what is the capital of New Zealand?
Auckland.
No!
Even I've got my hands in my head. Oh. Like, what?
What is, oh, it's Wellington, isn't it?
It's Wellington. That's disappointing. Okay, question number two. To the nearest 500 metres, how tall is Mount Cook?
I don't. How am I supposed to? The nearest what?
500 metres.
Mount Cook
in metres.
3,000?
It's a valiant effort. It's 3,754. Not bad, but you don't
get the point. All right. I feel like I redeemed myself there slightly.
Final one, which is really easy.
Okay.
I have a feeling this might be another head in hands moment. What is the nickname of the national football team?
Oh, I do know this. Or is it football? No.
Well, you know the rugby team, surely.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the football team.
Do you know do you know the rugby team? Please tell me you know the rugby
team. Isn't it like the all what?
Yeah, go on.
All something?
Oh my God. I'm so sorry to I feel embarrassed and ashamed.
What's the answer?
The national football team is the All Whites, and every single person that listens to this podcast is telling you that the national rugby team is the All Blacks.
I knew the rugby was All Blacks.
Oh my God. Anyway.
I had no idea what the football one was. I'm not into my football.
Let's move on quickly.
Jesus. Why'd you test me like that? I'm terrible at quizzes.
We can edit that.
Much better at asking the questions.
We'll edit
that's
it.
Horrific.
It is horrific. It is horrific. Well, let's move on to something you do know about. Formula
we'll
E.
re-edit that in we'll, the post yeah, so we'll, I get them all right.
We'll change all that. Formula E. Harry, you've done a few bits in Formula E, haven't you? You're a fan. Just briefly, you've done a little bit in the past in the FE paddock.
Yeah, I was there from... I've sort of been in and out since season two, really, when the cars were very, very different, doing some bits and bobs. I started off in Formula E as a runner and the tea boy. I was making all the teas for the broadcasting people. So I've been working my way up and... They biffed me off the talent call, but now at Formula One, so it's all right. I've forgiven them. So we move on. You've done a lot of Formula E, though, as well, haven't you?
I have. I'm still working in Formula E, actually. My latest Formula E exploits, in terms of being at a race, was actually Berlin for the final race of Season 7.
Oh, that was when you had to quarantine there, right?
No one got stuck there. No one really knows, but I nearly got the whole race cancelled because I turned up. I shook Mark Webber's hand in the lobby of the hotel, went up to my room, did my PCR test, came back and had a positive test. And they nearly had to bin the whole race. And I was in my hotel room in Berlin for the next 10 days. I missed everything. Didn't get to the race at all.
Tragic. Jesus.
Tragic. Anyway, enough about us. Shall I introduce today's guests?
I think it's about time.
So today, our first guest is Sam Bird. He's a race winner in every season of the Formula E World Championship to date and has been in the series since its very first race. He first appeared in karting before Formula BMW. He's been a reserve driver for Mercedes F1 before signing up to race in the first ever Formula E season in 2014 with Virgin Racing. We find him now, of course, with Jaguar Racing, and his teammate is Mitch Evans. And we're lucky enough to have him here as well. Mitch also started in karts under the mentorship of Mark Webber. He went on to win the 2012 GP3 title, as it was then. His electric career started in 2016 when he signed for Jaguar, and he remains there to this very day after a strong showing in Season 7, where he finished fourth in the championship, just a few points off the winning driver of Nyck de Vries. Here's hoping Sam and Nick can challenge once again. Sam and Mitch can challenge once again in Season 8. To the both of you, welcome to the Motor Mouth podcast.
Hey guys, how are we?
Very well. How are you?
I'm very well.
I'm really offended, actually.
Yeah, I just wanted to start off. Well, I want to apologise for my New Zealand knowledge, and then I also want to apologise for Tim calling you Nick. If you want to leave,
I'm sorry about that. It's not as bad as we had Freddie Hunt on the show, and I called him James Hunt, and that was awkward.
This doesn't. But hey, let's forget all about that. Let's move on and chat about you two, because you know what you're doing, or at least we hope you do. Where are you both, first of all? Let's start off with that. Sam, whereabouts are you dialing in from?
I'm in my home in Sandbanks.
Very nice. And Mitch, what about you?
I'm in Monaco in the south of France.
Very nice.
Look at that.
He's already one up you.
You're in the Monaco of the UK, so you can't say much.
True.
Now let's start off with, because it's not actually too often that we have two people on at the same time, particularly teammates. We've only done it a couple of times, and it tends to be other drivers in the Formula E Championship. So first question to you both properly, Sam, I'll come back to you on this first. Can you describe Mitch as a teammate? What have you found out a bit more after your first season working together?
I mean, I've known Mitch since, like, obviously watching him in GP3, and then he moved into GP2 and we did GP2 against each other. So we've known each other pretty much for the last decade on circuit. It's the first time I've worked with him, and honestly, it was great. You know, he's a good, fun guy, good banter, but also super professional and extremely quick. So to be honest, it's been great.
And Mitch, same question to you then.
Before you go any further, you said I'm perfect.
That's what it sounded like.
No, I'm just joking. I'm taking it first. As Sam touched on, we've known each other for a long time. In GP2, Sam almost won that year. We raced against each other. So I knew what Sam was capable of doing. And then obviously informally his sort of stats, you know, speak for themselves. And it's been great. I think last year we worked really well together, almost won the team championship. We both had a good shot at the drivers. So Sam's been a really good addition. So he can be annoyingly really fast as well. But I think the combination that we've got within the team, you know, we sort of balance off each other really well, I think. And we've definitely been able to take the team to the next step, which is really important. So looking forward to another season with them.
Now, Sam, take us back to your early years. When did that motorsport bug first bite you? Can you remember where it really became something on your radar?
If you want like the full spiel, I mean, it started when I was like 6, 7. I used to write letters to my mum and dad saying, guys, please take me go-karting. I used to watch F1 at home with them on the weekends. Back then it was on like Eurosport, wasn't it? So I'd watch it on Eurosport with mum and dad. And then I had my first go in a go-kart when I was 8 for my 8th birthday. And then if my grades were good enough at school every term, they'd allow me to go to Clapham or Streatham Playscape Raceways in indoor karting in London and have a morning there. It's like a well done. And when I got to 10, I had my first go in a proper race outdoors. And that was it, really.
Were you? Did you find you had a affiliation with the kart straight away? When you did that race at 10... were you doing well or did it take some time to get you up to speed?
Dude, it's still taking time. I'm 35. I'm still struggling out there. I won my first race. And at that point...
Sorry, Bob.
Yeah.
No, at that point then, it was like, mum and dad were like, right, you know, he's not bad at this. So we did the full season. I won that championship. And then it was only a lower level championship. It wasn't any good. And then I got into national and it was a bit different. But, that's what kickstarted it, really.
And same question to you, I guess, Mitch. You know, there's been a long history of racing drivers from New Zealand. Bruce McLaren, obviously, Art Bamber, Scott Dixon, Van Gisbergen, Brendan Hartley, of course, who we've had on the show. What's the scene like there? And what was it like when you were growing up and in your earlier years in karting? Is it pretty competitive?
Yeah, extremely. I think as a country, for our population, we really excel. I'll say generally in sports, but obviously in motorsport, it's probably stemmed from back in the days of Bruce, Denny Hong, Chris Amon. They sort of set the scene for us, something to target. And obviously with the McLaren name still around, you know, it's been a massive part of New Zealand motorsport history. So growing up, it was the karting scene was really, really strong. There is many drivers that should have got the opportunity to come overseas, right, and spread their wings. But the unfortunate thing with our part of the world is just so expensive to be able to race, obviously. But then obviously to try and come over to Europe is another massive step, which is it's just unrealistic for a lot of people. I was very lucky. I got picked up by a great family that have funded a lot of Kiwi drivers, the Giltrap family, and also Mark. Picked me up, and then that gave me the shot to come over to Europe. But if it wasn't for that, I just financially could not afford it. So yeah, the scene is pretty fierce back home, considering we've got, you know, quite a small population. So I do miss those days, you know, in karting and former Ford and former Toyota. It was a good place to learn, to be honest.
I suppose compared to Sam, you know, growing up in the UK, already in sort of the heartlands of karting and racing, for you, Mitch, how old were you then when you made the trek across to Europe? And was that quite a daunting part of your life?
I loved it. I was 16 when I left New Zealand, left school, which I was super happy about. The last few years at school, I wasn't really there. physically and mentally just sort of went there, literally eat my lunch and just pass my exams. I was just so focused on my racing. So yeah, for me to move when I was 16, looking back, it is quite crazy, but I didn't even think twice. You know, when I had the opportunity to come across, it was like, okay, when can I go? And it's just my mum moved with me initially just to make sure I could actually survive and not set the house on fire. So I had a little cottage at the end of Mark's driveway, which I was there for about 6-7 years. It was initially quite hard. Like, you get a bit homesick initially, just, you know, it is a big change, but especially even just within in the UK, you know, there's little things that you just take for granted, or, you know, back home, which is things are just different. Now it's like second nature to me. Like, the UK, I see the UK as almost a second home, and I spend more time there than New Zealand. So it's, it was initially hard, but obviously looking back, it was the right thing that I did, and just very grateful for the opportunity that I got to be able to come overseas.
So you were basically Mark Webber's next door neighbor.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I was like, because when I came over, I had no money. I was a bit useless. You know, just could only really drive a car half decent. That was it. I was training with Mark every day. Dinners at his house most nights, traveling with him because GP3 back then and GP2 were on the same weekends as F1. So I used to travel with him. So it was nuts. You know, I came from, you know, just a normal sort of life, and then it just went bananas. So I guess you could say actually that the cottage I lived in was his, like he owned it. So we were neighbors for a bit.
Wow, what a good guy to have as a sort of someone looking out for you and passing on advice and guidance when you're making your way in the sport. And Sam, segue is nice, and Formula One wise from Webber, you flirted quite heavily with Formula One. You've done testing duties for Williams as a reserve driver for Mercedes. How did those opportunities come about? And take us through what it's like to drive a Formula One car.
So firstly, the Williams opportunity came about mid-season 2007. I knew Johnny Williams because of my days in Formula BMW, and back then Williams had an affiliation obviously with BMW, so as a scholarship driver I knew some of the people in the team. Anyway, they kept an eye on what I was doing in British Formula 3, and I started winning a few races. I think I'd had like 10 or 12 podiums that season, and they invited me to start driving their cars to do some aerodynamic work, which was great. Somewhere in the house, actually, I've still got my first ever paycheck. So I got paid. My first ever time in a Formula One car, I got paid to do it, which is quite cool. It wasn't very much money, but it's something that I'm very proud of. And then fast forward to 2010, doing GP2 with ART. Jules Bianchi is my teammate, massive benchmark. And I start to do quite well and start matching Jewel for pace, and I win a race in Monza, and Ron Meadows from Mercedes called me and asked me if I could do the young driver test in Abu Dhabi. Obviously that went well, and then I spent the next 4 years with Mercedes as their reserve, flying around the world with Michael, Nico and Lewis.
Wow.
You know, is pretty cool. I've got to say that, you know, I have worked with two of my heroes. You know, Lewis is a hero. But working with Michael as well, two of the greatest of all time, is pretty cool.
Working with Mercedes in those early days as well, could you see from behind the scenes, you know, what was to come? Because, of course, it wasn't a dominating championship team straight from the off. It grew over time. But you were there for the early workings of it. Could you see what was about to come?
I think that when the new regulations came out, it got announced in 2011 what they were going to do with the engine regs, and we jumped on board on that on the simulator really, really early, like maybe like a year before anybody else, because everybody else was focused on the current regulations and getting their car as good as possible for the here and now. Mercedes kind of took a different approach and thought, let's get on top of these new regs for the V6 hybrid era. On the simulator and really tailor the rules to suit us. So I was doing some preliminary work in 2011, end of 2011, on a 2014 engine.
Wow.
So it was kind of then that you thought, right, I think that when the time comes in 2014, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Clearly, Red Bull had the upper hand when it came to the V8s and that kind of technology. But yeah, when it went V6 in 2014, Mercedes just cleaned up, didn't they?
Well, you could say that, to put it lightly. How incredible, though, to have been involved in that kind of structure as well, and to work with, you know.
When I was there, they didn't win anything. Maybe it was me. They got
But you laid the groundwork. I'd take that.
Do I take the credit and say it was all down to me on the simulator? I must have been magnificent. Or they got rid of me and all of a sudden they were great.
Well, since then, of course, you made the switch to Formula E in a race seat right from the very beginning of the championship. Can you cast your mind back to that time as well, the first time you drove that Formula E car, and your thoughts back then? Because we've spoken to a few drivers who are still racing in the series and who aren't anymore, or who just tested. And they all said, you know, they were a bit, you know, they looked at the car and thought, okay, here we go. What's this going to be about then? What did you think?
Yeah. So end of 2013, I've come runner-up in GP2, as Mitch said. Going to 2014, I got let go by Mercedes, and I had nothing. There was nothing about. I wasn't earning a living because I got paid for GP2 and the reserve role. So I was pretty much broke and was really worried. I was just about to go and do a course in physical education to get my personal training certificate so I could become a personal trainer, because I thought my career as a racing driver was over. And I got a phone call asking me to go for a meeting in London with this new team in Formula E called Virgin Racing. I'd heard of Formula E. I'd heard, you know, you read things in Autosport, you saw pictures of the car. I never thought that I'd be doing it, but I'd heard of it. Anyway, it was like a lifeline. I went to the meeting and thankfully got the job. The first test was at Donington. And yeah, I'd never driven an electric vehicle before. And I really didn't know what to expect. The first thing, compared to the GP2 and the F1, was just how quiet it felt at the time. Because I'd come from something that was screaming in my ear to that, it was very bizarre. But it's kind of like a blur now, because Formula E has moved on so far and got so much better and so much more advanced that it's difficult to really remember those first tests, apart from nobody really knew what they were doing. I know nobody really had a clue, and it's taken all this time to get to where we are now.
And then Mitch joins later when everyone does know what they're doing. And how was that, Mitch, when you first got in a Formula E car?
I did two seasons with the first generation car. So thing is, what was quite tough is that I came in obviously with a team, like with Jaguar, but we were a brand new team, like all new personnel. Some of the crew had worked on the battery side of things with Formula E, but it was two rookie drivers and basically a rookie team. And I think the powertrain was designed in a few months. So we were like really inefficient, very heavy, software-wise, so far behind, two drivers that didn't really know what was going on. And we just somehow, yeah, it was quite an incredible time looking back, because at the time it was like, what the hell is going on? Because we were the worst team, and we were at the back, and our fourth race, all of a sudden we finished fourth and we started getting points, and we didn't make it into Super Bowl that year, but we did some really cool qualifying sessions and we just showed some good progress, which obviously we could just lay some really nice foundations for the, you know, next few years. But we still had to keep working on it, hire new people. I had a few teammates over the years as well. But initially it was really hard because we were just learning as we went, probably to a similar degree what Sam had in season one. So yeah, that was looking back, we were quite, well, not lost, but we were just starting this new sort of chapter, this new era of motorsport. And if only we knew what we knew now back then, that could have been a different story. But wild times, especially with the car changes as well. Like, it was just so many things to learn as a team, as a driver. It's quite fascinating.
I've recently purchased a electric car. And it's got, I've got the paddles on the steering wheel for regen. This is probably a really simplistic way of looking at it, but is it effectively the same sort of process? When you're driving along and the team are like, right, you need to save some energy. Presumably the paddles on the steering wheel are still for that purpose. That's why you're pulling those paddles to regenerate the battery. Is that how it works? And does that take getting used to in a race environment, Mitch?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much works the same way. So when we save energy in Formula E, we have a sort of a software that's been implemented into the car to try and get us to the finish of the race as quick as possible. So we've only got a certain amount of energy, and to be honest, it's not enough to finish the race. We've got to try and energy save to make it to the finish. So we do some coasting down the straight, and then after the coasting phase, we'll then pull a paddle like you have, and that'll recoup 100% energy. So when we recoup under or regenerate under braking.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
We lose a little bit of energy in the system, but that paddle recoups 100%, which is really effective. So yeah, we do. So that's quite relatable from what you do in the car to what we do in the race car. Obviously, we're doing it every corner. It's quite a different, it's a bit more intense for us, but let's say the concept is quite similar.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, Rodin Cars. Rodin are a bespoke formula-style supercar manufacturer based in New Zealand. With their vehicle offering, this is the only place where you can truly live the F1 lifestyle. With the easy-to-run, easy-to-maintain, and even easier-to-drive Rodin FZ, you can live the dream of hunting down those final tenths of lap time whilst being fully supported by the team at Rodin, who will provide you with after-sale care, storage options, exclusive use of their incredible track in New Zealand, and, courtesy of Formula Racing Team High Tech Grand Prix, will run, set up, and maintain your vehicle on and off the track. The Rodin FZ is a vehicle like no other, perfect for any true car aficionado in search for that elite performance. To find out more, head to rodin-cars.com.
And do you, presumably, well, you're traveling a lot faster than we are in our road cars, and when I press the paddle and activate the regen, it's very noticeable. I feel it, obviously, before I've even touched the foot brake. In your case, when you're traveling at that speed coming out to a corner and you pull on the regen, is it a very noticeable reduction in speed?
Yeah, it is quite noticeable. It depends on the corner, because we can reduce the aggressiveness of the regen. We've got a limit. We can't go above a limit, but we can, within that range, we can have it super low, high, depending on what we feel like is the most comfortable. Especially in the wet conditions, you'd be very careful not to have too much, because to lock the rears. Obviously in a road car, you've got more systems to control that, so you'd never get into that state, but we don't have that in the race car. But we're always optimizing the amount of energy that we can recover, and that tech and those learnings are going straight back into the road cars, which we found with the iPace. with just within our region strategies, we're able to increase the range of the eye pace on the track on the road, which is quite cool to be part of that. So yeah, we're just always finding, because we don't want to obviously overheat the rear tires, but we don't want to leave energy on the table. There's so many factors that come into it, but I think that's quite, yeah, it's quite a cool thing that, you know, everyday users of electric cars are able to also experience that, because then it's more relatable for them when they're watching us on track.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And actually, because it does require, you know, all this knowledge and sharing of data and working together, especially as teammates, compare that to Formula One, where, you know, you really want to beat your teammate. Yeah, you've got access to their data. You just want to absolutely, you know, crush them and win. I'm sure there is absolutely an element of that in any kind of racing. But in Formula E, is it more of a team effort, especially you have to work together to understand the efficiency, especially, you know, when we get the new generation of cars that come in?
Yeah, me and Mitch are competitive. Mitch wants to beat me and I want to beat Mitch. But at the same time, there is a bigger picture. We're employed by Jaguar Racing and we both want to work as hard as possible together to ensure that Jaguar can try and win the team's championship. That's why we are employed by Jaguar Racing, to try and do that. If one of us can win the driver's title as well, then great. So it's, you know, when you say it's like that in Formula One, we're both super competitive. It is like that in Formula E as well. Like, you know, the helmet goes on and, you know, we're competitive. The one thing I would say, though, is that we, in my opinion, the first season that I worked at Jaguar, you know, the relationship was fantastic on track. And there were instances on the circuit where we had to negotiate each other. And it was done instantly without any issues. And it was for the good of the team. And it worked out better to do that than it would be to squabble and fight. And that's all I can say about that, really.
Now, I know you've both had a lot of highlights in your career, but there is a moment that you've not yet experienced, which is the very important Motormouth quiz. We've had lots of your peers take part in this quiz. Harry will probably know where some of them are on the leaderboard. But I'll hand over to my illustrious, bearded, lofty colleague to introduce you to the hardest quiz in motorsport, the Motormouth quiz.
Thank you very much. Yes, Sam Bird, Mitch Evans, welcome to Motormouth, the hardest quiz in motorsport, because the answers may vary. And points are given out on a if-I-feel-like-it basis. So there are 14 points up for grabs in total. If you get 14 points, you go to the top of the leaderboard, which is currently occupied by Susie Perry, Alexander Sims, ooh, and Nelson Piquet Jr. So I think you're going to be wanting to be getting up towards there. You don't want to be, Mortara, right in the middle pack, 11th. You don't want to be a Buemi, right at the bottom of the pile, or a Chandock, who is last. So you want to avoid those areas. If you want to aim for 12 and above and you're doing well. I've got four questions for you, each about each other. Are you ready for question one? I'll take that as a yes. Okay. Mitch, when is Sam's birthday? Sam, when is Mitch's birthday?
That's not fair because I mean, it's not fair because mine was literally the other day. Like, couldn't have missed it.
Life isn't fair.
Well, Mitch, when is his birthday? Now this will be a true test.
Well, it's the 9th of January.
Okay, what was the year, though?
Oh.
1927.
You're not that old. You don't look a day over 21, Sam.
Oh, 1985.
Oh, close. Sam, do you want to reveal it?
I'm actually a little bit offended that you think I'm 37, Mitch. No, 87. 87.
Oh, no. Oh,
87.
That was the year of the great storm in the UK. Ooh. 87. Yeah.
And the year of the Sam Bird.
I remember it well.
Go on then, Sam. Well, Mitch, we'll give you a couple of points for that one. But Sam, can you get Mitch's date, month, and year?
This was last week, and
fair at all, is it? Like if you'd asked Mitch when my birthday was in June, he wouldn't have had a Scoobies. So it's not really. So Mitch actually had his birthday at a race event last year because we got him a cake. It was in, I think, Puebla. And Puebla.
That was early.
That was early.
Giving him clues.
Anyway, I'm keeping
others. Well, let me add in that you are working together here. So the points is a total point.
But can they confer? I mean,
as long as they don't give each other the answer.
Fine.
Well, I was just about to say, can he not just say his birthday and we take the point?
Then no, that's an immediate disqualification.
Sneaky. Oh, okay. I'm saying June.
And he's
27. So 1995 or 96.
Oh, very close. Mitch, do you want to reveal it?
94 on the 24th.
Well, you know what? That was an admirable effort, actually. A proper effort there. I'm going to give you 2 out of 3 points in total for that question. So we're off to a decent
start.
Second question, though. Sam, how many wins in Formula E does Mitch have? And Mitch, how many wins in Formula E does Sam have?
Mitch has 2 wins.
Spot on.
I know Sam's got more than 2, that's for sure. either 10 or 11. 11.
Excuse me.
There was foul play going on there.
I'm going to give you the full house there. Okay, I'm going to allow it. 3 points in the bag. Okay, next question. Now, of course, you both drive for the Jaguar Formula E team, but when Jaguar was in Formula One many years ago, 5 drivers, according to Wikipedia, raced for the team. Can you name them?
Eddie Irvine.
Correct.
Mark Webber.
Correct.
Christian Klein.
Correct. Two more.
Loving this.
Justin Wilson.
Yes. And you get the final name.
Oh, it's such a P.
Oh, yeah. He's done his own work.
Pizzitola?
No.
Pizzonia.
No. First name starts with a P.
Oh.
Oh, maybe we're thinking a different person.
Yeah, we are.
Not Antonio Pizzonia.
Not according to the notable drivers on Wikipedia, which is obviously a very trustworthy source.
P begins with a P.
Yes.
I'll
give you a nationality. Yeah. Spanish.
Pedro de la Rosa.
Spot on. Oh. Pedro de la Rosa. Well done.
Very good.
Although you say Antonio Pizzonia, that does ring a bell, but maybe that's something else. But I'm going to give you 3 points, so well done. Okay, one more question, and then a bonus point is up for grabs. Sam finished runner-up in GP2 in 2013, but what team was he with? Mitch. Only Mitch can answer that one.
Beautiful. This is easy. Russian time.
But excellent. Well remembered. That was an easy one. Yeah. Okay, bonus point for you. How many different nationalities make up the 2021-22 Formula E grid? So this
Great
coming
question.
Season, Great. How many different nationalities are made up on the grid? Sorry?
Who's answering this one?
Both of you together. You can both work together on this one.
Right. Oh. So we've got English, we've got Kiwi, we've got...
Brazilian.
We've got Swiss... We've got French. We've got Portuguese.
Yep.
We've got... does Edo classify as Italian or Swiss?
Swiss.
We've got American.
Mexican. Then Italian, Giovinazzi.
Yeah.
How many you got there at the moment? How many fingers is that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 8, 9.
German.
But he's like a hybrid, isn't he? He's sort of a bit of everything, Lotterer.
Right, yeah, Andre, yeah. And obviously Pascal, yeah, no German. Yeah. So fine. I feel like that's it, but
there's got to be something else, surely.
You've got 9 at the moment. We're looking for a few more little hints. So what have you got at the moment? Let's run through it. So obviously we've got New Zealand and UK, for sure.
Brazil, I mean, Swiss, Hollywood, French, Portugal, Mexican, Italy, German.
Oh, that different.
Mexican? Why?
Got that.
Do we say Mexican?
Got that. Yeah, I said that.
I don't think there is a Mexican on the grid.
No, American.
American, yes. American. Okay, so how many have we got? Are we going with 9?
That's 9.
No, we've got 10 at the moment.
We've got 10, okay.
That's 9, isn't it?
Oh, I thought we'd replaced Mexico for American.
Yeah, so you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
Brazil.
6, 7, 8.
Brazil.
9.
Brazil.
Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil is 1. Yep.
We got Brazil.
We had Brazil, I thought.
Yeah, you got English, Kiwi, Brazil, Swiss, French, Portuguese, American, Italian, and German.
So how many was that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Okay. Is that your final answer?
They're struggling now.
Just looking for a number.
Could be, but I'm struggling to think of who else is on the grid.
We go from the back of the grid to the front. I don't know.
Well, Neo's both British. Dragon, Brazilian and Italian.
Yeah.
Then 2 Germans and Porsche.
Swiss and English for Dams or Nissan. Dutch. Dutch.
Dutch and Belgium.
There we go.
Oh, they're going to kill us if they hear
this. Yeah. You missed out the Dutch and the Belgian. Yeah. So, can I have a final number from you just to confirm all of that? So, we've got UK, Dutch, Belgian, Brazilian, Swiss, Italian, Portuguese. Yeah, you said Portuguese.
Yeah.
You said Germany, USA, yeah. French. Who was the other one?
That's 11.
That's 11. We got there in the end. It's the correct answer.
This is a high score. This is up there.
This is up there. Right. Okay. Let me quickly do that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 11. Oh, okay. Well, out of a possible 14 points, Sam Bird and Mitch Evans, you scored 12 points, which does put you joint third with Mark Webber. So he's up there as well. Just half a point below Brendan Hartley, I'm afraid. So unfortunately, pride not coming out there. But you are ahead of Ollie Rowland and Edo Mortara. So something to be proud of there.
Well done.
Always good.
That was a good effort. Well done to you both. And there's the highlight. So any future interviews, please make sure you reference that as the best thing you've ever done in your career. Now, let's move away from Formula E. I want to know from each of you, any hidden talents? What are you good at outside of racing? Let's come to you first, Sam.
What am I good at? I'm still figuring it out. I mean, I used to be good at football.
Yeah.
I'm okay at golf, so that's good.
Do you have a handicap?
10.
Oh, so you're good at golf.
I'm okay. I can play. Yeah. It's all right. Besides that, I'm fairly rubbish at most things, to be honest.
An average human.
I'm a bit average.
Just an average kind of guy that drives very fast.
Yeah. No, I'm average. No, those are the two things that I probably enjoy. I really enjoy watching football now, and I enjoy playing golf. Besides that, I hold my own when I go running. But yeah, I'm fairly talentless when it comes to like cooking and normal stuff.
Mitch, saying to you.
I can't beat that. thing is, since I was born, I've literally been at racetracks my whole life. I used to play rugby. I actually got to a stage where I had to choose between rugby and racing. I think I chose the right one because I'm way too small to be a rugby player. But honestly, hidden talents, I'm hopeless.
Like, instrument or anything or.
I tried to learn guitar. That lasted about a week. I don't know. Honestly, nothing. Like I like making my coffee in the morning, so I've got like a proper machine and I do the latte arts and all that.
Oh, okay. I'd call that talent.
Yeah.
You do some good latte art.
We're clutching at straws. We'll take that.
Yeah, he's a good barista.
Yeah,
well, I mean, fullback. You got your fullback.
Exactly,
if it all goes wrong.
If all goes wrong, you can go to Costa Coffee or Starbucks and decorate people's coffee.
You do play a musical instrument, Mitch. You blow your own trumpet.
Mate, not as good as you though. No,
yeah, that's queued up.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, so this is a question we sometimes ask people, very random. If you had to be covered in feathers and you could fly, or scales, but you could swim as far as you liked, which one would you rather be covered in?
Feathers.
Yeah, I've been a bird all my life. I think it'd be fun to be more scaly.
Yeah, a bit scaly.
A nice split down the middle, feathers and scales. Excellent choice.
Ever asked us that ever in an interview before.
We've got plenty of those. We've finally done it.
We've asked drivers questions they've not been asked before. I call that game over. Let's end it there. Thanks, guys, for joining us.
We didn't, but the thing is, we did. You did say if you're covered in feathers, you could fly. So
yeah.
I mean, you're the first person actually to say scales. I don't think anyone said scales. I think
look at my name. I've been a bird for a long time, and maybe it's time for a change. Maybe my natural habitat is not in the air. Maybe it is on the ground.
Yeah.
2022, the year of the scales.
Well, one of your talents will be incredibly fast and long distance swimming because of your scales.
Yeah. I was thinking more like I'd be a tortoise or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that more of a shell? That's more of a shell.
Yeah, but they do have scales under the shell.
Oh.
Yeah. You know,
interesting. It's interesting when you get into the nitty gritty of it, isn't it?
Low, boring.
We'll call you Sam Scales this year, I think. Yeah. That's what your name will be across the season. Now, gents, we do have a final three questions that we like to ask to all of our guests, and they are brought to you by our partners at Rodin Cars. Tim, do you want to kick off with the first one?
Sure. Quick answers. Mitch, let's come to you first. What's got you excited at this very moment?
The new Formula E season coming up.
Yes. Sam?
Same.
Good.
Excellent
answer. Next question.
Okay, Sam, we'll start with you this time. What is your favourite racing destination and why?
New York, because it's New York.
Yes, love a bit of New York.
Mitch?
Monaco, 100%.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Back in hard.
And I love that Formula E has gone to Monaco and showed Formula One how to race around that track. Absolutely epic. Amazing overtakes. Right, final question for you both. Another highbrow one you'll be pleased to hear, Sam. Mitch, I'm going to come to you first. What are you scared of?
A lot of things. I'm actually not a massive fan of heights.
Oh, really?
Are we talking aeroplane height or ladder height?
No, more like aeroplane, building, sort of on the side of a building sort of height.
So like if you went up like the Empire State Building or something, would you be a bit weird being on?
Yeah, when you're close, yeah, I'm not cool with that. No, I get freaked out, yeah.
I went up the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, which is so high that it kind of takes away the fear because it's almost unfathomable to get your head around how high you are. It's weird. It's almost like being on a plane. It sort of takes away that fear. Very strange. Mm-hmm. Sam, same question to you.
I'm going to go a bit more deep and meaningful with my answer here.
I'm
going to go. My biggest fear actually is probably failure.
Oh.
I worry, I'm scared of not fulfilling what I want to be able to achieve in my career because I understand that I'm not as young as a lot of the guys out there and I still haven't achieved what I want to achieve. And yeah, it scares me that I haven't yet fulfilled what I want to be able to fulfill within motorsport.
But it's also on the flip side, a great driver, isn't it? I mean, pardon the pun, but it's a great motivator to keep you going because motorsport is so fragile. Do you agree? Do you think that fear of failure drives you forward?
Yeah, it can work two ways, can't it? It can eat you up and spit you out, or it can drive you forwards and make you find that last little bit and spur you on. but you wanted an answer like spiders. So
No, not at all. I'll tell you, I didn't want to say, but you're not the first racing driver to say failure. It is fairly common, I think, especially amongst high sort of performance athletes. Mitch, okay. do heights drive you forward as well?
Yeah, they came to mind initially, but I'm like, let's not go too deep here. But Sam went there, so fair enough.
No, I think the deepest we've ever had was Freddie Hunt, who did get very philosophical and very emotional. Sort of about his father and very emotional and you know, a very long answer for that one. So don't worry, that has not been the deepest answer. But thank you for sharing that with us as well. It's so fascinating to hear how, you know, the inner workings of racing drivers work. But I think we've just about reached the end there, Chance. Mitch Evans, Sam Bird, thank you so much for spending a bit of time with us on the podcast. Really great to chat properly with you, and best of luck for the season ahead. We'll be watching all the way. But Mitch Evans, Sam Bird from Jaguar Formula E Team, thank you so much for joining us on the Motormouth podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out Rodin Cars. Forget a one-off experience. With Rodin and the Rodin FZ, you can become and live the life of an elite performance driver. With your very own Rodin FZ, you'll be able to drive a truly remarkable supercar. Hunt down lap time and search for ultimate performance. A solo cockpit, but never alone. With Rodin's incredible after-sale partnership, you'll be looked after on and off track with an official Formula Racing team running and maintaining your vehicle. And as an exclusive owner of a Rodin car, you'll get exclusive access to their circuit in New Zealand. So, what are you waiting for? To find out how you can own the F1 lifestyle, find the perfect racing line, enjoy the thrill of a roaring engine, and experience the purity of driving, visit rodin-cars.com. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.